I need the list pulled up here. Maybe. Ah, here we go. All right. First is it Dante Stevens?
Yes.
All right. You are up first.
All right. So yeah, this, let me see how to share this. Yeah, hear me pretty good?
Yes, sir.
I can hear you.
Give me 1 second. I'm trying to put this up. All right, can you see that?
Yeah.
All right, so I'll be covering AIs today. Just bear with me. I have stage fright. All right, so. Next slide. All right. So imagine if your computer could think like Sherlock Holmes. That's an AI in a nutshell. Do you remember the movie from, I think, Wizard of Oz? Yeah, the Tin Man who wanted a heart. But an AI were more about brains. Alan Turing asked, can machines think? We're still trying to figure that out. His 1950 paper, Computing, Machinery, and Intelligence, set the stage for what AI could become. When it comes to different types of AIs, you have narrow AI that is good at one thing. It won't write poetry, but it reminds you to buy flowers. General AIs is a mixture. It's more versatile. Super intelligent AI is more like a concept, but it hasn't been developed yet. Y'all still hear me pretty all right?
Yeah.
Okay. Wait, did I hear some noise in the background? So here's a short video that I found on YouTube explaining artificial intelligence. Are y'all able to hear that?
No.
All right, can y'all hear it now and see it?
Yep. It's a black screen.
Having some technical difficulties.
You can't see the video?
No, it's just a black screen.
What is going on here?
I have to stop sharing and then reshare. There it is.
Okay. Sorry about that.
Sorry.
Goodness. What is going on here?
If this video's got audio, you'll have to go up in the share thing again and then click share audio or share computer audio or something like that. Yeah, include computer sound, that's what it is.
Artificial narrow intelligence, artificial general intelligence, and artificial super intelligence.
Oh, what about now?
Let's start with artificial narrow intelligence, or ANI. ANI refers to AI systems that are
designed. I can't hear it. Specific
tasks. Yeah, I can hear it, but it's just low.
ANI has it's really quiet. Abilities and operates within a predefined scope.
Examples of ANI include virtual. All right, so I'm just going to skip this portion. These systems can answer questions, play music, and control smart devices in your home.
ANI is also used in image recognition systems.
All right, I'm just going to share my screen again. Like I said, bear with me. Thought I kind of went over this yesterday before. Are you seeing the screen with the notes or the presentation?
I'm seeing your timesheet.
Yeah.
Time clock wizard.
Oh my goodness.
All right.
Okay, there we go. All right. So, yeah, all that. So the video pretty much explaining the different AIs, which is the normal AI, the general AI, and the super intelligent AI. So the narrow AI is like a genie who's only good at one wish, need a song recommendation, good, done. But it won't help you write your taxes. This is like the everyday chat boxes that we use, Netflix, face your ID on your phone, stuff like that. Siri, Alexa. So all of that is narrow AI. General AI is like the jack of all trades that we're dreaming of. It's an AI that can learn as we do, and it's adaptable and versatile. The Tinichi, I can't pronounce that. I think that's how you said. And China's, it's a supercomputer that can do more than 33,862 million operations every second. And back in 2015, it was considered the fastest computer in the world. So super intelligence is like Einstein on steroids. Imagine that AI smarter than any person that you know. Such AI could potentially feel emotion and have desires. All right, machine learning is a technique a computer used for the computers. It's like doing its homework, and they get better grades each time. The learning styles are unsupervised, which is finding patterns. Supervised, learning from examples, and reinforcements, which is learning from mistakes. NLP is why Siri doesn't think you're asking about the weather when you say weather. It's like teaching a parrot to not only repeat, but to understand and answer back. So you see this with like, again, grammar checks, using Siri, stuff like that. And even customer service calls. When you call the center, it understands what you're asking for. I know it's most of the time it's aggravating because you can say, I need to do this, and it'll send you somewhere else. But that's an example. All right, automations. Because robots don't complain about Monday mornings, imagine a robot that makes your coffee, file your reports, and never asks for vacation days. That's automations. Machine vision. So this is how your phone recognizes your face and doesn't unlock for your twin. Or does it, because my son has definitely opened my phone with his facial recognition. For the people that have iPhones, you can see this feature when you access your photos, and it groups the photos from different family members. I thought that was kind of weird the first time I seen that. But it's cool. It's neat. It's cool. The feature of AI. It might predict you're a lover movie you never heard of. AI might soon be a new Beethoven or Picasso, or it might just help you shop faster. We're looking at a future where AI is the best doctor, driver, personal shopper you've ever had. It's evolving very fast, and it comes with a lot of problems that people see. Some concerns are privacy and job impacts. Another is who's responsible for AI actions and who owns AI-created content. If you haven't already seen it, Kanye and other musician voiceovers have stirred up some concerns with record companies and their copyrights. I know if you have kids, you probably have seen this on TikTok or whatever. And one of the main concerns is AI warfare. So they think the smarter that AI gets, it will become subconscious and pretty much take over humans, pretty much. That concludes my presentation. What are your thoughts? I know it's a little rocky, but not a little, a lot of rocky. Nobody? Okay. And these are my references.
Very nice presentation. AI is becoming a real hot issue these days. It's getting pretty, some people think it's getting really out of control.
I can see that. Not in the near future, but you know, once we start using it for other things like warfare, it can become an issue. I'm seeing where Elon Musk is doing like a brain implant. I think he already did that. I'm waiting to see like how this work out. But AI, I think it's good and bad. Just depending on how you use it.
Yeah, right now it's just circumstantial on who's using it and what for.
All right, next. Other questions? Yeah, next person, I guess.
All right, I think that is me. So I am going to share my screen. Hold on a second. There it goes. All right. Can you guys see my screen? And hear me okay?
Yep.
All right, perfect. All right, so my name is Candace. Thank you for coming to my masterclass. My presentation tonight is on the evolution of television technology. There it goes. So before television was invented, we had the telegraph and the pantelegraph. Samuel Morse was one inventor of the telegraph in the 1830s and 40s. It allowed long-distance communication by transmitting electrical signals over a wire. And Giovanni Caselli invented the pantelegraph, which could send drawings and notes across vast distances using electrochemistry. It's a precursor to the fax machine and transmitted images over the telegraph lines. So those kind of laid the foundation for television to become what it is. And as you might notice, as I go through the presentation, a lot of people were working on the same technology around the world separately, all at the same time. It's kind of interesting. So for instance, the first television was invented in 1924 by John Logie Baird. His first invention worked mechanically by scanning an image using a spinning disc and projecting it onto a screen. It could transmit the outline of an image a few feet away. The TV screen used the reflected light to create a low resolution image about the size of a postage stamp. So that's this picture right here is basically what that would look like. And unfortunately, it took some time for it to take off. No one really believed him that he was able to do that until around 1926, which was a couple years later, when he demonstrated it for the Royal Institution, because he was in Europe. It immediately gained popularity, and the Baird televisor went on sale in 1929. So the picture down here is kind of what that looked like. And around the same time frame, Philo Farnsworth invented the fully electronic television, amazingly at the age of 15, and it eventually put Baird's TV out of business. Baird actually only made about 1,000 TVs before Farnsworth kind of took over the game. His version, Farnsworth's version, used a vacuum tube that would shoot a beam of electrons line by line against a light-sensitive screen. His TV had better quality. It was easier to mass produce. Farnsworth was a genius. He actually ended up having hundreds of patents for electronic and mechanical devices at the time of his death in 1971. A lot of things that we started using and some that we still use today are all attributed to him. And RCA, which is a familiar name, was also working on a television system, and it challenged Farnsworth version. So that's where HMV is the next evolution of TV. It became available in 1938. It used the new cathode ray technology and combined television and a radio receiver. So CRT technology was bulky and heavy. I'm sure a lot of you remember how big and heavy TVs used to be. This diagram down here shows basically what that looked like, that cathode ray technology. And how it would work is the electron gun would shoot a beam of electrons to the phosphor-coated screen. And it was directed using a horizontal and vertical electromagnetic field. So it would kind of direct those electrons on exactly how to move on the screen. And it would create a sequence of horizontal lines called a raster that appear so fast our eyes interpret it as a constant image. One electron gun was used for monochrome, while it took three electron guns to do color. And one would be red, one would be green, the other one would be blue, and it would produce three overlapping images. And mixed together, it would be the full color that we're used to seeing. So some of the first TV shows started to appear in the 1940s. Broadcast stations included NBC, ABC, CBS, and DuMont. TV shows were first played during prime time in the evening, and then daytime television made its debut in the 1950s and 60s. Companies were constantly inventing new technology to promote to consumers. The TV remote control came out in 1950. And I think the first remote control was called Lazy Bones, as funny as that is. Color television then came out in 1953, though it was very expensive. It led to black and white TVs having a price drop. So this allowed more people to own a TV. And this concept kind of applied all throughout the evolution of television, even going forward. Basically, only the wealthy could own the novel technology, but as it progressed, the older models became cheaper, and this allowed the lower income people to be able to purchase them. Cable networks became popular in the 1970s and broadened the number of channels available. The Sinclair Microvision was released in 1976 and was the first portable TV. Here's the Sinclair Microvision right here. And then here's an example of one of those first remotes. Looks very silly. And a lot of the first remotes, too, would actually plug into the TV with a cord. So it wasn't even wireless or the infrared technology that we have. And then now we're getting closer to modern TVs, what we have now. So flat screen TVs hit the market, but were very expensive. They began to replace box TVs in the 2000s after the prices started to drop. Flat screen technology used plasma screens and liquid crystal displays, with LCD taking the lead. Screens could be larger and lighter as LCD allowed the picture to be of higher resolution or better quality. The standard became known as high definition. Cable TV is slowly being phased out by smart TVs with streaming capability without the need for a cable box or antenna. So TV coverage of world events made people more connected than ever before. It allowed people to see what was happening in the world and feel like they were a part of it. Events like the Vietnam War were more real than ever. People knew exactly what was going on. TV shows dedicated to traveling the world or history documentaries helped to bring diversity into our living rooms. So it was kind of a precursor to social media. It just led to that, the whole world being able to be involved and know what was going on. All right, that concludes my presentation. Does anybody have any questions? Got my references here.
Very nice presentation.
Thank you, thank you. Has anybody got any questions? Little bit of trivia. I've got some little trivia for you guys. The HMV TV that used CRT, it stood for His Master's Voice, and it was based off of a little dog named Nipper. It was a painting that was painted of this little dog that was like listening into a gramophone. I had to look it up. It took me a little while to figure it out. Did somebody have a question?
That's cute.
Oh no, I was just gonna say that's cute. That's all. That's really cool.
All right.
Great job.
Thank you.
All right, next up, it looks like Jamila Boyd.
Oh, I'll go next in her place because she has to pick up her kids.
Oh, okay. Yeah, that's no problem.
All right. Do I just hit share?
Yeah, up the top, you hit share and then share screen. And then if you have anything that's like a video or something in your presentation, you check share. The include computer sound.
Wait, hold on. Gotta go with my. Okay. How I 1 second. I got Mac, so I gotta change my permissions to share my screen. All right, here we go. Oh, yeah, whatever. Okay. All right, share. Wait, what did I click on? Actually, let me see.
It should be at the top right of the screen by the leave call button.
Yeah, I clicked on share.
Uh-huh.
Wait.
And then you'll do screen. And then,
what?
Hey, like that.
Is working? Okay.
Yeah, there it is.
All right. And how I switch my view to not presenter view or see more actions. High presenter view. Okay, here we go. Okay. All right. So today I'm going to be going over the history of iPhones and why iPhones are so popular. Yeah. So our agenda is going to do an introduction, history of iPhone, go over the rise of Apple, how Steve Jobs actually saved Apple, go over a little bit of Steve Jobs' history, go over how the iPhone started, how the App Store started, how Apple incorporated subscriptions to actually drive customer sales and customer loyalty. Go over how iMessage has been used to pretty much maintain consumer loyalty. Go over our references and go over any questions anybody may have. So for our introduction, let's see. Bam. So today we're going to be going over the history of the iPhone, as you guys all may know. My name is Tim. I know some of you guys may not like iPhones, but it's okay. As much as people do not like iPhones, iPhones can be described as the main driver behind the popularity of smartphones. iPhones have been incredibly innovative in its features. Steve Jobs was an incredibly businessman. He was able to inspire his teams everywhere he went. Apple has continued to keep its dominance over a smartphone market. I will go over how influential Steve Jobs was. I will also talk about the introduction of iPhones. I will end with why people remain loyal to iPhones. So Apple was founded on April 1st, 1976. It was founded by Steve Jobs and Steve Wozniak. The founders wanted to revolutionize the way in which people viewed and used computers. It had to be compact enough to be used in a home office. It was the first mainstream computer to actually have color graphics. Sales drastically jumped from 7.8 million to 117 million in 1980. Apple also went public the same year. By 1985, Jobs and Wozniak left Apple for different reasons. Jobs sought out John Sculley from PepsiCo in 1983 to replace Wozniak. There was a lot of conflict between Sculley and Jobs. It proved to be a bad move for Jobs to bring Sculley in. The conflict caused Jobs to leave Apple in 1985. Jobs will later go on to cement his legacy in different ways. Bill Gates offered Sculley a chance to actually license Microsoft software in 1985 on Apple computers. Sculley declined it, however. The Windows operating systems had a similar graphic interface to Apple's. Apple peaked in 1990 after posting its highest profits at the current time. Computers using Windows OS quickly began taking over market share from Apple so much experts actually believed in 1996 Apple would fail. So it can be said that Steve Jobs actually saved Apple from destruction. Apple was failing due to not having a unique OS and computer. Windows-based OS were quickly taking over market share due to ease of use and accessibility. The board of directors decided to buy Next Software. Jobs was the founder of Next Software when he left back in 1985. The board also decided to ask Jobs to become an interim CEO. Jobs accepted the position, but referred to himself as an iCEO. So as you guys can see, Steve Jobs kind of started the whole I when he became CEO of Apple again back in the late 1990s. Jobs collaborated with Windows to develop an operating system. A Mac version was created solely for Apple's use, and Jobs began to spread his impactful innovative ideas to different areas such as an iBook and iPad. Or iPod, sorry. All right, so Steve Jobs was born in San Francisco. He always had a love for engineering and computing. He met his future business partner, Wozniak, in high school. After leaving Apple, he started a software and hardware company called Next Inc. Many people do not know or remember that he also invested in Pixar Animation Studios. Steve Jobs was actually a reason why Pixar became so successful. Toy Story was the first major hit from Pixar Studios and had a lot to do with Steve Jobs. It still serves as a classic, spawning multiple sequels. It can be argued we would not have Pixar without Steve Jobs. In a way, Jobs changed animated movies as we know today. Just because he was instrumental in the success of Pixar does not mean he was without flaw. Jobs was described by his team members as being abrasive and critical. Yet his team still remained loyal to him because he demanded success. He believed in success and knew his team would be successful. In 2004, Jobs announced he was diagnosed with a rare form of pancreatic cancer. It was during this time period where the most successful creations were launched. The MacBook Air, iTunes, iPod, and iPhone were all breaking sales numbers while changing the landscape of how consumers were able to interact and communicate. Apple announced the iPhone in January of 2007. iPhones were made available for purchase in June. Apple marketed the iPhone aggressively before it went on sale. Jobs knew it would be a major success after the success of both the iPod, and MacBook Air. The innovations and evolution of smartphones started with the iPhone. It was ahead of its time. It set a standard that everyone else would have to catch up to compete with. The original iPhone had a glass touchscreen. Most phones still had plastic screens. It had support for different touchscreen interactions. It also had an amazing camera for its time. Web browsing was possible using an iPhone. The iPhone cannot be talked about without mentioning Apple Music. Apple Music was revolutionary for its time also. No smartphone before it had a library as deep as Apple Music that integrated with iTunes. Consumers could purchase music or download music to listen to on the iPhone. iPhones also offered GSM/Edge cellular network access. iPhones were able to connect to Wi-Fi and be Bluetooth enabled. It was marketed as a phone, iPod, and web browser all in one for a relatively low price. Apple also changed the game with its exclusivity deal. Apple had a revenue sharing agreement with AT&T. Apple got a percentage of revenue from every iPhone customer on a monthly plan. No one else had deals to the magnitude Apple had. Competitors soon tried to emulate the deal Apple had with varying success. The original iPhone was a massive hit. People waited long lines to purchase an iPhone on release day and still continue to even today. In fact, people still wait incredibly long lines to purchase an iPhone on release day almost two decades later. No phone company in the U.S. can attest to similar staying power for release days. By the end of 2009, 21 million iPhones had been sold. The iPhone 3G was released in 2008. It introduced 3G technology. It also was equipped with assisted global positioning system, or GPS. Arguably, the biggest impact Apple made in the smartphone industry happened in July of 2008. So much can be said about the App Store. It will still not be enough to describe the impact it had on smartphones and businesses alike. The App Store was published in July 10, 2008. It originally debuted with 500 applications. The App Store influenced every area from social life to gaming life to cultural life while being an economic machine. It changed everything. Prior to 2008, only a few large companies dominated the software industry. Although many indie companies existed, none of them could compete on a massive level over time. The App Store made a way for smaller companies to create space in a field dominated by larger companies. Temple Run is arguably one of the most iconic smartphone games of all time. It was colorful yet simple. It was easy to pick up while hard to master. Creators of Temple Run know it had been downloaded over 1 billion times by 2018. Many applications had similar experiences after becoming available on the App Store. Many apps years ago were only iPhone-exclusive applications. The exclusivity motivated people to buy more iPhones, driving up sales. Popular apps could only be used on the iPhone because ports to different devices were not available at launch time. Applications help many iconic apps show off features of the iPhone. Instagram is one of the most popular social media platforms of all time. Instagram has been noted to have completely changed the mid and upscaling dining experience. The popularity of Instagram inspired restaurants to focus on presentation even more than taste. People wanted to take amazing pictures of food to post on Instagram. Instagram was a startup that became famous because of the iPhone. Uber was also a startup that utilized iPhone features to become popular. Some of the biggest companies such as Facebook, Twitter, Yelp, and Amazon began designing apps to join the App Store because it's what consumers wanted. No smartphone had the level of impact that iPhones had. Temple Run was also not the most iconic game on iPhones. Multi-touch technology allowed game developers to do more while designing games for App Store. Hits such as Super Monkey Ball, Words with Friends, and Fruit Ninja were wildly popular. Angry Birds was also an early game that had a significant impact culturally. Angry Birds spawned multiple games, merchandise, and feature-length movies. In terms of users, iOS is stated by Apple to be the most popular gaming platform worldwide. In-app purchases were introduced in 2009. Most people are familiar with in-app purchases in some way. It is the ability to make purchases with the application. Purchases can include but are not limited to cosmetics, levels, and extra lives in a game. In a way, it could be viewed as the start of the freemium market. A free game that incentivizes people to play to pay to win. $1 billion was paid out to developers by June of 2010. In-app purchases proved to be an instant success for Apple. Apple does not stop innovating. As a result, the concept for subscription-based apps came into discussion. In 2011, the App Store officially began supporting subscription-based apps. It was an instant hit. Streaming companies were able to offer streaming services with ease on the App Store. Gaming companies could offer subscriptions for games. Lifestyle companies could also offer streaming services. Apple once again took a concept and improved it. popular applications such as Netflix, Hulu, and Tinder were able to thrive with subscriptions. Healthcare apps and fitness apps also benefit immensely with Apple. Apple offers apps to benefit consumers and doctors, especially with the interconnectivity gained on the Apple Watch. One of the best features of iPhones is the iOS messaging system. iMessage is iconic, is an undeniable fact, is referenced in all over pop culture and around the world. Adults know what blue text mean. Adolescents know what blue text mean. Apple knew what it had in mind when it created iMessage. The goal in mind was inclusivity and exclusivity. iPhone users have a unique messaging service exclusive to iPhones. When the iPhone sends a message to an iPhone user, the message is in blue. When iPhone sends a message to a non-iPhone user, the message is in green. On the surface, it appears like it is designed for looks. It is pleasing to the eye. Behind the scenes, it is really designed as a way to peer pressure iPhone users and non-iPhone users. When group text is formed, multiple users are put into one group chat. When the chat is blue, every user is shown to have an iPhone. When the text is green, one or more users is shown not to have an iPhone. Apple executives introduced the feature with little fanfare to cement iPhone dominance over adolescent users in the U.S. Peer pressure persuades the group to kick out the individual with green text out of the group chat or pressure them to get an iPhone. It came to light during a very public lawsuit with the creator of Fortnite, Epic Games. In public records, Apple decided not to offer iMessage to different platforms as a strategy. It is used to pressure whole families into having an iPhone. Chief executive Tim Cook stated iMessage would hurt Apple if it was on Android. Features exclusive to iPhone messaging is a way to keep iPhone users on the iPhone. Apple also created features to target teens for its messaging services. Cute emoji-like faces were introduced to market towards teens. Messaging games such as Game Pigeon only works iPhone to iPhone. It was noted by Wall Street Journal interviews that teen users love being able to create exclusive iMessage group chats because users can be added or subtracted without creating a new chat. It's all about being loyal towards Apple. The Android operating system dominates the global market. iOS only accounts for 40% of the U.S. market share for smartphones. However, over 70% of people aged 18 to 24 are iPhone users. Teens are the target audience. So as you guys can see, iPhones are marketed towards teens, and Apple is saying its target audience. Do you guys have any questions?
No, amazing presentation.
Yeah, it was pretty good. That's a lot of that stuff I didn't know. It did remind me of a comedian bit that I heard on the morning radio show I listened to. It's, he worked in IT, and he was talking about how IT guys generally typically like Windows and Android better than Mac and Apple because you can get into them easier and modify things. It's like... he's like, Mac and Apple people are kind of like Jehovah's Witness, you know, they're all diehard for it. Like, if you accepted Steve Jobs as your Lord and Savior.
I mean, I believe it. It's what Apple was aiming for. But I didn't want to get into, like, the demographics, more demographics besides teens. But, yeah, Apple pretty much targets people for iPhones just to build brand loyalty. And it's why AirPods and MacBooks and iPads all can connect with iPhones because they want people to keep buying the same family of products. All right, and here are my references. How do I stop sharing? All right.
Very nice. All right. Jamila is up next.
Okay. So I just share my screen.
Yes, you click on share and then screen, and if you've got like a video or something, anything with audio on your presentation, you'll just click include computer sound.
Okay, can you guys see my screen?
Yep.
Okay.
Yo. Let's go back. Hey, I'm all the way home.
I'm sorry.
Reach your mic, Steve.
Yeah, oh. Okay, my name is Jamila. I am doing my presentation on mobile device security.
Yeah, I'm trying to see if I can get some light on the door and so I can make any shit.
Hey, Steve, your mic is unmuted. Okay, so what is mobile device security? It's the full protection of data on portable devices and network connected to the devices. Common portable devices within the network include smartphones, my toddler's favorite, the tablet, and personal computers. Mobile compromise. Mobile devices now account for 59% of global website traffic, but almost half, 45% of companies surveyed in the most recent Verizon Mobile Security Index say they have suffered a compromise involving a mobile device in the past 12 months. And over here, it shows a graph of that over the last few years. In 2021, the FBI's Internet Crime Complaint Center team received a record 847,376 complaints, a 7% increase from 2020. The estimated potential losses were over $6.9 billion. Unsurprisingly, ransomware, business email compromised, and the criminal use of cryptocurrency were among the most commonly reported types of incidents. Okay, so what are the most common hacking techniques? Malware is the most common of all hacking techniques. One anti-malware provider describes it as any code developed by cyber attackers designed to cause extensive damage to data and systems or to gain unauthorized access to a network. There's phishing and social engineering attacks. In a phishing attack, hackers send carefully crafted emails that appear to come from a trusted source like your bank. Key to the man in the middle prevention is the use of encryption. SSL, the same technology that protects your credit card details when shopping online, can be used to encrypt your network traffic. If a hacker does capture that, they cannot use it because they cannot decrypt it. Which is, that's really one of the main reasons why I kind of picked this subject, because I've been a victim of getting like debit card information stolen from shopping online. Let's see, how to secure mobile devices. There's many ways to secure your mobile devices, but it does depend on the type of device you use as well. A VPN, a virtual private network, is an encrypted connection over the internet from a device to a network. The encrypted connection helps ensure that sensitive data is safely transmitted. It prevents unauthorized people from eavesdropping on the traffic and allows the user to conduct remote work safely. I know a lot of jobs that I've worked for, we had to use a VPN, especially when working remotely, because it's hard trying to secure everybody when they're not exactly in the office. And of course, passwords are one of the most basic ways to secure your devices, but passwords are sometimes compromised from people using the weak passwords or using them over and over again for multiple websites and apps, such as 1234 or using your name, something that's easy to guess. Now, most websites, they have requirements for the passwords where it has to be about 8 characters or more, lowercase and uppercase, punctuation, numbers. How to secure mobile devices? Continued, biometric authentication is when a computer uses measurable biological characteristics such as face, fingerprint, voice, or iris recognition for identification and access. Multiple biometric authentication methods are now available on smartphones and are easy for workers to set up and use. That one is not my favorite way to secure a device, only because I feel like it's easy to take someone's face and just put it in front of the device to get in. I've seen it happen. Other ways to secure the devices: run updates when they become available, security scans, which most computers usually come with those, avoid phishing emails and voice phishing, and learning modules for the employees. Those are actually really helpful before my cybersecurity journey. That's really all the training I had on security. So some things to avoid: public Wi-Fi, phishing emails, voice phishing, and websites that are not secure. So with the public Wi-Fi, things like airports, coffee shops, which is easy for hackers to get your important data. Mobile devices and ethics. There are several ethical concerns that are commonly associated with technological advancements, including privacy, security, job placement, environmental impact, and the potential misuse of technology. The rapid development of digital technologies and the increasing interconnectivity of devices have raised significant concerns about privacy and security. As more personal data is collected, stored, and shared online, the potential for data breaches, identity theft, and unauthorized surveillance grows. Additionally, the use of AI and machine learning in facial recognition and data analysis raises ethical concerns about potential biases, discrimination, and violation of personal privacy. And these are my references. Did anybody have any questions?
Very nice presentation. Very nice. I'm not a question, but you brought up at the end the AI and biometrics and stuff. That's ironic because I'm actually having to deal with that with work right now. I'm a truck driver, and they have a in-cab camera that's on you all the time, and there's a consent form has come up to sign off on them using your picture and stuff mentions biometrics and stuff, and it's just kind of, it's iffy.
Yeah. That's a bit much.
The invasion of privacy, it's a fine line.
I agree.
All right, next is Shay Ryan Starks, is that right? Looks like they are not here. So next would be Muhammad.
Hello. Share my screen.
Sorry, I wasn't going to try and pronounce your last name.
You're fine, don't worry about it. Just make sure I have everything pulled up. Okay, perfect. Can everyone see my screen?
Yeah.
Yep.
Perfect. Okay. Hello, everyone. Today is my masterclass, and the topic I wanted to talk about was AI and the banking world. Now, this is a little specific to my current job. I am a banker at PNC Bank, and kind of the use of AI has kind of taken the world by storm, you could say, and it's kind of incorporating in a lot of places. And the one place it's incorporating is the banking world. So what does it mean for the banking world? What does it mean for people and everything? So just a few things about it. I mean, recent advancements in AI and machine learning technologies has really become common in the public eye. We're kind of seeing it like in our everyday lives. We're kind of seeing it at work, school, everywhere, all over the place. These technologies have sparked some discussions and speculations about how it impacts society, impacts work, and impacts like kind of everything else we do with our daily lives. But what does it really mean for like how we use it? What is it for our daily lives use, security, and how it could actually help? To kind of start off, some pros of AI and machine learning and banking: better customer support. So help with basic needs. Sometimes, you know, when you don't want to be on hold long time for customer care, they have the chat boxes or some other tools to help customers kind of like solve their basic needs. You know, like, hey, a transaction was declined, or when is my debit card going to be delivered? Kind of those basic things. Assist after closing hours. So that's a good thing for like, you know, when the bank is closed, typically after 5 p.m. or 6 p.m., sometimes a few customers have like a few questions or they need help with something. That's where these AI machine learning tools come pretty handy after hours, kind of help out the customers and help the bank out because they're in a way servicing their clients. Enhanced banking services. So it does help the customer able to track their account funds and other information, whether they're paying something, paying their credit cards, or keeping track of their funds, making a plan for themselves for the near future. This is where AI and machine learning has really taken a lot of positives from, helping people invest their money, helping people keep track of it and kind of set goals for themselves and kind of just have a proper future for themselves. And customized banking needs, you know, when it comes to customizing it, from my experience, we're able to help our clients build for their future. You know, what do they want to do with their money? Like, we can use AI simulations, generations, and everything to kind of show them where their money could look like in a few years, or what they do if they put in this certain kind of account, just some things like that to just give them a visual representation of that. And a good common thing is a scan recognition. So if there's any report of such suspicious activities, especially if it's after banking hours, this is pretty good to like help customers report any kind of fraud, kind of like make them feel secure that, hey, a fraud did occur with me, but I need to report it. The bank is closed. That's where these AI tools, chat boxes, and machine learning systems kind of come in handy. And just overall keep most clients' information safe. I know previous presenters talked about biometric. That's kind of something that's also implementing a lot. Whenever you log into your PNC or any bank app, that you have biometric settings to like allow that only you are the one accessing it. But when every pro in life, there's always some cons. So some cons for AI and machine learning and banking is it is expensive. As much as AI and machine learning has become a good thing, and as more and more companies start to like kind of utilize it more, the maintenance of it will be costly. So there's going to be more money put towards on maintaining it, and maintenance will be pretty common. It's not going to be like one or two twice. It's going to be always happening, always changing. And I would say individuals who are going to be in charge of monitoring these AI stuff, they're going to be getting big salaries too, because I'm guessing it's not going to be that easy of a task to just monitor. You're going to have to do a whole lot working with these AIs and machine learning systems. Some bad calls. So, I mean, regardless of how good AI or machine learning system can be, there will always be some sort of errors that can occur. There can be some mistakes being done by these machines because they're not human. There can be some sort of like system failures or something like that that could go wrong. Someone is trying to go into their account and something happens and it shuts down. Those things. Incorrect information can be presented. This is kind of on our, like, not just customer side, but as a worker side too. Maybe we're working on something and we're relying so much on these AI technologies that sometimes it gives us wrong information, and then when we present that to someone else, it looks like we're giving the wrong information. And then one of the biggest things, and this is kind of like the more like common thing, is unemployment. As cool as AI is, not only is it that amazing, but it's also taking that many jobs away too, if we're being frank here. A job that 10 people can do, a single AI can complete itself too, at maybe like less the cost, maybe paying those 10 people. So jobs will be affected, more machines doing the work. So we're going to see more and more that as time goes on. I see it currently in my bank, like so many people have currently like lost jobs, mortgage officers, fraud detection people, because banks are just relying mostly on these AI to do it. You know, why pay a mortgage officer to process a loan when an AI could just do it all by itself and use machine learning technology? So that is a little bit of a concerning part. There are some positives, but the biggest one is the unemployment aspect of it. Yeah. So impact on the banking world. So having AI and machine learning doing basic needs that humans did is kind of a cool thing. At one part, it could help out us bankers, because we're able to, like, you know, report things. We're able to use AI to figure out things, kind of help clients with their funds, kind of help with their accounts. But at the second hand, like I mentioned before, it does affect those jobs that kind of like easily just take care of like for people, such as mortgage officers. You know, AI could just go on your computer, apply for a mortgage, and it'll do everything for you without even having to talk to a person. So kind of that human, less interaction will occur. So less and less humans will interact with each other, and less people will be doing what they need to do. Now, this is something I don't know if any of you have been seeing that in your local cities or anything, but bank buildings will be gone and more things will move online. Where I live in Chicago, there's been a lot of banks that have physically closed because they're moving everything virtual now. They're kind of having more people try their online systems. You know, hey, if you want to apply for a checking account, you could do that online. If you want to apply for a credit card, you could do it online. So, and I would say not like in the next 5 years, but definitely in the near future, we're going to get to a time where like there's going to be less buildings, less banks. People could just do everything with the comfort of their home. If they have a dispute, they could take care of it from home. If they have any other issue or need to do something or service, they could do it from the comfort of their home. So it does make things easier, but at a cost. So the cost is the human, like, obviously, livelihood that's going to be taken away. It's kind of like, I don't think machines are going to take over the world or anything, but the same way, it's going to be more and more of a common thing, and people are just going to get so used to it where it's just not going to go anywhere. And then just slowly, everyone will be adapting to these AIs on a daily basis, kind of like everyday stuff, things you don't think you would need AI in, AI will become a factor in that. And this is just my reference page. And that's kind of it. It was a little bit of a brief one, but something that's kind of like going to keep going on. And then, yeah, it's just an interesting topic from my perspective, working every day as a banker dealing with these kind of things on a daily basis. But any questions? Okay, so I'll say that's my master class.
Very nice presentation. Awesome job.
Thank you very much. I'll stop sharing.
I thought it was crazy that now we can deposit a check by taking pictures of it.
Yeah, no, it's you're kind of like seeing everything, like you said, deposit checks and stuff. I mean, we still have like a lot of the, I would say, the older clients were still not used to it, or we're still scared about it and stuff. But as time kind of goes on, the next 10 to 20 years, that's when it's going to become more and more common. I did read an interesting article, I think a few years back, where in Japan, actually, when you go to Japan, a lot of people are now just using their cell phones. No one's really carrying hard cash. So in that perspective, actual hard currency will kind of like go away. We'll all just be walk around with our phones, tapping it at McDonald's, tapping it at the gas station. No one will be carrying actual cash. So that physical cash value will just kind of slowly disappear. And I guess, you know, it's just what it is, but we're humans, so we're just going to adapt to it by that time.
Yeah, it can be a big deal thinking about it, because, you know, like, I know crypto's real up and coming, and I've invested in a little bit myself here and there, but, you know, if you look, the U.S. dollar isn't backed by anything anymore. It's just dirty paper. I mean.
The other thing, too, also, you mentioned that you're a truck driver, Joshua. I've read also something interesting that a lot of companies are letting go of their truck drivers and started using automatic driving trucks, meaning that if someone needs to a company to deliver packages from one state to another, instead of having a person do it, they have automatic driving trucks do it, meaning that it's more efficient for them, claiming that they could easily have a truck drive back and forth without making any stops for like food or restroom, and just make those deliveries on time without paying a actual person. So those things are also kind of, I would say, a little scary that those jobs are being taken away.
Yeah, that's crazy. I knew it was a possibility. I didn't know it was already in effect. That's crazy. That's been talked about before at a previous job I had, truck driving. It's like talking, but when you have an actual person driving, a person can make, you know, make their own decision on how to react to a situation. You know, it's, I don't know. You deal with kind of deal with emotion versus machine learning type thing. I don't know. It's crazy. There's already a shortage of truck drivers as it is, but if they start implementing smart trucks and stuff, you know, that's. All right. Well, that's. Looks like the end of it. Let's see. Yeah, the other one didn't join, so. That concludes the masterclass. Thank you all for presenting. Everyone did a great job. And I'll post a track of timestamps or approximate timestamps. I'll post it in one of the chats. And so if, you know, if y'all want to use it for a resume or anything like that, you can get an approximate timestamp on when your presentation was.
Thank you.
All right, everyone, have a good evening.
You too. Take care, everyone.